Today marks the anniversary of what is considered the largest civil rights protest in U.S. history, and it happened here in New York City. On February 3, 1964, students took part in a one-day boycott to call out the separate and unequal conditions of the city schools. WNYC's Yasmin Khan takes us back to that day and to the unfinished business of school integration.
460,000 students didn't go to school. Even adjusting for the usual absentee rate, it was quite an organizational feat to have that many empty desks. Television news footage of that day shows teenagers chanting, "Jim Crow must go," in front of the Board of Education building on Livingston Street. There's a heavy police presence. Some of the adults taking part get arrested, like this woman, who's white. She's angry at education officials.
In 1954, the Supreme Court said the segregated schools are illegal, but they still have them. They're violating the laws. We're not.
School segregation had been illegal in New York for decades before the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education case. But housing segregation kept the schools racially segregated and blatantly unequal. Schools that served mostly minority students had less experienced teachers, inferior facilities, and even shorter school days because of severe overcrowding. These are stubborn issues that we've allowed to linger in the school system today, despite the fact that kids fought to change things more than 50 years ago. One black teenager on the picket line in 1964 calmly explained his demands this way.
All we want is equal education. That's all. Equal education.
The activist Milton Galamison organized this day. He was pastor of Siloam Presbyterian Church in Bedford-Stuyvesant. Besides calling for desegregation and improved schools, he wanted the protest to call attention to what activists called vague promises by the Board of Education to improve things. Here's Galamison on the day of the boycott, interviewed by ABC.
Nobody can do these children more harm than these children are being done every day in this public school system.
He'd been criticized for calling on parents to keep their children home from school in the name of improving education.
And in my opinion, the refusal of the board to already have taken immediate steps to correct these evils is a disgrace and a crime.
But members of the Board of Education did have plans.
New York's television and radio stations now present a special report from the Board of Education. The board today presents its plans for better education through integration.
In fact, just days before the boycott, members of the board presented a 3-year blueprint to racially balance some schools. They had charts and an itemized action plan.
School-by-school review of all existing zone lines. Re-emphasis.
That's James Donovan speaking. He was president of the board. The plan included better integrating school staff and busing some students short distances.
The plan that we have presented for the promotion of integration is tangible evidence of the belief.
The board was trying to prove it had integration on the front burner, but city officials had been speaking with a moral urgency and making plans for years already. It formed a commission on integration in 1955. It had subcommissions, public hearings, and final reports and recommendations well before the school boycott.
Northern politicians and northern school board members were great at talking about the importance of integration. They were much less good at having the political will to actually make sure that people went along with those decisions.
This is Matt Delmont, associate professor of history at Arizona State University. He says the number of segregated schools in New York actually quadrupled between 1954 and 1964. In part due to changing demographics in the city, but also because the city got a lot of pushback to even small-scale integration plans.
And in most cases, what would happen is they would issue the report, and then you would get tremendous protests among white community groups that would encourage the school board to be extremely modest in terms of the actual policies they would advocate on the ground.
Delmont is the author of the forthcoming book, Why Busing Failed. So he's been looking at this exact issue in northern cities. Places where people extolled integration efforts on principle, but when it came to making changes on a neighborhood level, communities, white parents, pushed back. In March of 1964, soon after the school boycott, some 15,000 white mothers had their turn. They marched to City Hall with placards reading, "Busing creates fussing," and "Don't let the courts dictate our children." This was in response to the city's plans to rezone about 20% of the schools that were mostly black and Latino. Here's how an ABC television reporter summarized the event.
The women abandoned their vacuum cleaners and their kitchen sinks to come here and protest against certain Board of Education plans for speeding integration in the city's schools. Their chief complaint, the plan to transfer white students by bus to predominantly Negro schools, some of them in ghetto areas.
Okay, the language is dated here. Women and their vacuums, the term Negro schools. But the message that day in 1964 resonates today. Families wanted to send their kids to their neighborhood school. But Delmont says the neighborhood school concept was never sacrosanct until the issue of school desegregation.
They never said, we don't want to send our kids to school with black children, or we don't want black kids in their schools explicitly, at least not in that protest. What they said is, we're trying to protect our rights as parents and taxpayers.
The city would move forward with some of its integration plans. But to civil rights activists, the plans were never broad or swift enough. Plus, the neighborhood school remained at the heart of school planning. And with housing segregation, almost guaranteed that schools would continue to be segregated. This frustrated activists like Milton Galamison, who organized the February 3rd boycott. Here he is a few years later, speaking on a WNYC radio broadcast.
Every time we brought in a teaspoonful of integration, the Board of Education threw it out by the shovelful. And then the black community got to the point where it felt that it would no longer push for desegregated school systems.
By the late 60s, he shifted priorities. He wanted black communities to have local control to improve the conditions of schools themselves. But it wasn't Galamison's endgame. The demands he and protesters made during that February 3rd boycott were still the goal. Galamison wanted integrated schools.
I have believed, and I continue to believe, and perhaps I will always believe, that the best kind of education for every American child is a racially balanced education where people of different ethnic groups are learning together.
That idea of integration as an educational goal is still up for debate, but it's not one that education officials are leading. If they ever need ideas, though, there are plenty of reports and recommendations written 50 years ago that still apply. For WNYC, I'm Yasmin Khan.
For more of our reporting on integration in New York City schools, or the lack of it, go to schoolbook.org.